be a non-co-worthy day, but it's just past time of a retired man. My mom was a housewife, and she lived domestically, you know, down through the years, but she was a housewife and the best cook in the world, and her nickname was Baby Doll, and my daughter called her Honey Baby. It was long before people actually knew her real name, which was Lynn. for it to my mother or her for him? Never. And I imagine they had to. Please. But however they did it, I don't know. But I never ever did. And I thought, oh, come on. Once you get grown and you're married, and I'm like, y'all had to have some deceit sometime. Probably went outside on the back porch or whatever. I don't know what they did. I had my two oldest brothers, and I can remember, oh my goodness, I can remember my daddy had built an additional room inside of the house, and my two oldest brothers slept in that room. And one night, they were fighting over the cover, and they were grown men looking in the minds themselves at this time. Well, my daddy ruled his house. And I remember him taking his belt strap, his mining belt, and going in there and whipping. And they said, oops, time to go. It's in my house, you follow my rules, you know how that is. And yeah, I remember that so well. And then she drove me in there, wrapping her over the cover. Yeah, and they eventually left after working in the mines and ventured to the city. One went to Missouri, and one went to Des Moines, Iowa. And my two youngest brothers followed later on to Des Moines, Iowa. And the one in Missouri ended up coming back to West Virginia for a while, and then he went back to Detroit, where he stayed, and lived in the Chrysler for years. My sister married young, and she's the mother of 15, and 11 living, and we just lost one daughter, which was the baby daughter. She died about over a year ago. But they had a big family, and my sister passed. I can remember our little house set up on a hill. There were two rows of houses, double family houses, down below the hill. And there was one little house that set off from the two rows of houses, and another house set up on the hill across from us. And there were the outhouses and clotheslines and wells. Coal mine up on the hill. There was a church up on the hill at our house. The little church on the hill was actually set up on the hillside. I could run across the hill from where I lived on that hill to my church instead of going down the hill and running up the road up the hill. And right below the hill where the church was, a little lady named Mrs. Master. And I don't know how old she was, but golly, she had me way up there and got around better than any of us. But it was a joyous camp. It was a village. If you got in trouble, they were allowed to discipline you. It was just something that you respect was high. Which you don't see very much of it. And but that's the way it was. It was a community of sharing. And so that's why there's just family I never went without. Because if someone didn't have something, and it seemed always that there might be an extra person at our table, which was a friend of a friend, you know, or the children that just happened to be there, and they were all, no one was sent home. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were there in dinner time, then you said, oh, thank you, please. I just have good memories of my childhood. I wouldn't trade them for anything, not for this day and time.
Thank you.
put me on the organ. Mm-hmm. I knew nothing about playing organ. Mm-hmm. He told me to put my hands on middle C and stay there. I'm like, oh, crazy, I am going, you know. But from that, that teaching, you know, I was finally to really stick my teeth into it, and I ventured a little out to the piano, and I love it. I thank God every day for the gift of having the talent that I do have. Can't play like I don't read music, and can't play like anybody else. I play like God, I won't be black. That's my way. And I just love it. Music is in the bones. I've been blessed to write. I was known in the incarceration around just to make sure that I wasn't deceiving myself, that I had written 20 or more songs. And I have. And to me, they're beautiful. And I get joy out of singing. I try to do them every day, some of them. So I have been blessed to write those songs, and they're songs that I need to do something with, because I feel that being a blessing to me, they may be a blessing to someone else. I've just never taken the time to have them copywritten and put on, you know, put in safety. If I ever hear about singing, I know it's my song. I have to deal with me. I've sang some of them out in public for sure. In fact, just this last week, I was given a poem. And when I say given, I was sure that it's been gifted in the past. Certainly so. Last night, sitting there, I happened to be going to my bill staff, getting this month's bills ready, and I ran across the poem that I had started, but hadn't finished. I thought, maybe I should finish this poem. So I thought I was watching Dancing with the Stars and the commercial. And a commercial would come on, and something would come to your mind that would go along with the poem, and I finished it. It was about 1:30 last night. It was completed. And so that is my love of music. I think it carries and carries me out of politics. My son sings and plays beautifully. And I think music is just something that's universal. And it gives me much joy. I'm told that it gives others joy. Like I said, they sing like I used to, but I still can. And I always do, as long as I can. But I like music. And I really like that. Being that I never thought I'd live to see a black president, this is not the only one that I've written, but this is how this came about. And why, I don't know, so I titled it The Dream. And it goes like this. I had a dream one night of a day I thought I'd never live to see. A man that is president of the United States, with color just like me. The dream was so real and exciting to me, for as a slave, I was not yet free. How in the world could this be? I saw myself in my dress of blue as the parade in your honor was passing through. Oh my God, can this be real? Colored folks give me thrills from tall and tall, skirt and tears. Hard, hard labor ran through the years. Oh Lord, don't let me wait and find that this is all fake. This kind of joke I just can't take. A fool of me my dream would make. Well, thank God I did awake to find out it was not a fake. You see, it was my great-grandmother's dream. She had talked about it when she was a teen. She had told my grandmother as a child dream came true at last. You know, I called the White House, believe it or not. I had the honor of meeting the Teacher of the Year, Andrea Santos. In Washington?
Oh, wow.
And I'm so proud of her. She is such a sweetheart. She teaches at Logan High. And as a matter of fact, she honored me with being allowed to come and speak to her Spanish class for the whole day. It was wonderful. But anyway, she was telling me I went to a meeting and she was like a speaker. And she was telling me all her journeys that she was going to be doing as Teacher of the Year and that the White House was going to be one of them. I said, "Ooh, girl, I'd love to give you my books, did the Obama." She said, "You know, I will have taken them. I just don't know what I do." I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, I won't put that pressure on you. I'll just call the White House. I'll bab that White House and actually got a hold to whoever it was. They gave me the information on what to do to send a book to President Obama and myself. And I also wanted to send one to Joe Biden and Gio because I love them both too. And so I've got to get on that. Send them, I've written two books, and I would like to send them each a copy and a few poems that I've written of him. I told him I don't want them to be tossed away or for them to think I'm sending them something vicious, you know. Yeah. But they said it's sweet knowledge, which I figured they did. So they would probably actually get them, and that would be a great. And that's, well, this poem, to think, you know, she never, 108, she would never dream that she would live to see that day. And to have that honor, I'd be dancing too.
So was that a
I don't know. I don't know how it came to me. Mm-hmm. It just did. I would say that in years prior, that they never would have ever even thought about it or considered it. Well, I have to say that in my lifetime, I never thought that I'd see it. Mm-hmm. So I would say this is somebody's dream. Never ever thought about writing a book. Everybody says, you know, I'm a writer, girl. But I never actually put that to thought much. But the colored school, the black school that was here at one time, El Cama High School, has an annual reunion every year somewhere in the United States. And this particular year, some years back, it was in Columbus, Ohio, and several of us, quote-unquote, girls, were reminiscing about our childhood, and that was something that two of us knew, that we knew that if the adults knew when we were kids that we knew it, what would they think, you know? We were laughing about it, and a lot of other things. And somebody spoke up and said, I think it was April that spoke up and said, you know, somebody ought to write a book. And I knew in my mouth, I said, you know, I'm going to do that. Well, no, really, that was just like flippant and went on. This was in July. And I don't know why it is, but it seems like after you come off of vacation and was at that point, and being retired, both of us sitting there looking at each other, and he was looking at John Wayne from 1919, and I'm like, okay. So I get on the computer, and you know how to start on this book. I had no idea how to start, what to write about, how I would go about it. I had no idea. So, in some time during that time of thinking, I thought, well, I'll just do it as a child, you know, being in Tokyo, later. So that's why I started as a 5.5-year-old colored girl who had my told my story on the dark side. And started, you know, like that. And it's fiction. With the truest pictures. Mm-hmm. All of the characters are fictitious. Just think here, my friends, but they think they know everybody in the book. But it is fiction and my vivid imagination. So that's how I got started on writing the book and going down to it. I'd ask my husband things about the coal mine, you know, so he could kind of put his expertise into it, since he was a retired coal miner. And I'd read him some of the passages in the book, and he said, "Poor, you're not going to put that in the book." I said, "Yes, I am." He said, "Girl, where do you get your mind of thinking?" I said, "I don't know." But anyway, I laughed at myself at some of the things. I've read my own book twice. That's just how hilarious I think it is. And sometimes I'd actually know what a writer means when they say writer's block. Mm-hmm. Because then I would go like days or even maybe 2 weeks of not knowing where to take back up at. But then I'd get a burst and then I was taken away, you know, and thought continued to just driving along in the car, then I had to start taking notes and jotting down things that write in and to come home and, you know, get back on. And finally, you know, we were in Walmart one Saturday here in Iowa. I think we were having tires put in the car, and we were walking through Walmart, and in passing, we met up with a couple of friends that I used to work with at the hospital, Ken and Carol Munley, and we were greeting because we hadn't seen each other in quite a while, and I was informing him that I'd written a book. He said, "Oh, I really did that." I said, "What? Really?" So he was giving me, you know, information on what he got. I said, "Ken, I don't know what to do from here. You know, what do I do? How do I go through getting it out of my hands?" So he was the one that got me to the publishing company that he published his book through. They're self-published. So I have to toot my own horn this thing. I had to pay my own money. And so with his information, you know, that was how my first book got published. And so I said, "Ken, I want you to proofread it for me, see what you think, because I don't know, you know, how to take it, you know." So I gave him whatever they call it, the thing you stick on the side of the computer, you know what I mean? Standard. And he took it home and he said, I said, "Tell me what I need to critique, take it out or whatever." He said, "I wouldn't change a thing." He said, don't change anything. This is this little nosy girl, you leave her like she is." So I said, "Okay." So now, the day I've already contacted the publisher, we've talked and she's walked me through, they sent it back. The proofreading and all of this, that, and the other. And she calls me one day and she says, "Cora," which I don't know her, haven't seen her. Mm-hmm. We talking over the phone and chatted with her. Mm-hmm. And she says, "Cora," she says, "is Mr. Abernathy still alive?" And I said, "Who, Mr.?" She said, "Turn to page, go to computer, go to page such and such." Okay, so I do. And she said, "Is he still alive?" I said, "No, girl." I said, "No, what? You remember the suspicion? She said, oh, my God, that's right. Suspicion, she was sent out of going to tell you to change his name if he was still alive. I said, there is no A.C. Lee and there is no Mr. Abernathy. It reads so true. So that's just, you know, now I just, oh, wow, I was on the writing spree then for sure. So I cut that book off from 5 1/2 to 15 years old, the first book. And I thought that's enough. Because that book could take place back in the 40s and 50s when the Negroes migrated from the deep south to West Virginia, Kentucky, anywhere there's not. The book could be in Chile, where the mines are, just any place. Any place where there are mines. And the little girl can be any little girl growing up in that era. And so I cut it off at 15 because I thought that's far enough. Because times have changed and many things have taken place in her life. And now she's at that adolescent age of teenage. And I thought, okay, that's good enough. So I stopped it there. And I had already started on the second book. So she starts out from 15 to almost 18. Graduating. Integration has happened. A lot has taken place in those 3 years, you know, from 15 to 18. And so the second book, first book is titled Faces Behind the Dust. And it wasn't titled that from the beginning. I had titled it Coal Miner's Daughter on the Black Side. Well, my correspondent to the publishing company said, Cora, you know, that I don't think that a word, you know, Loretta Lynn already has that coal miner's daughter. So I think it, I don't think that she said not a conflict of interest, but it's just that the title just wasn't gonna be good for the book. So I did that as a subtitle. And I'm Granny Musician for Electric Tempo, Masonic Lodge, Eastern Stars, and we were holding, I think it was the 98th annual session in Martinsburg, I think it was. So now here I am, I have had this title in mind for 2 years while I was working on the book, so I was at a loss for a new title. So at the morning session, I went to my keyboard and sat down. And as my sisters in the Stars began to enter, I told them, I said, before the day is over, I want you all to jot down a title for my book. I don't have a title now. So after the morning session, they came and laid a piece of paper on the keyboard. And, but this little lady came running. She said, oh, Sister Harrison, Sister Harrison, I've got it, I've got it. She said, oh, I've got goosebumps. I said, well, what is it? She said, Faces Behind the Dust. I said, ooh, I got my first too. That's perfect. And because in the book, there is a sentence with that very title. And it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's it. So that's why her name is Sheila McGee. And so I honored her on one of the dedication pages. And so that's how that became titled. But the little girl's name is Clara B. Rose. And so the second book is titled Hello World, Here Comes Clara B. Rose. She's teenager now. So that's how, and I finished that, and it was published and completed in after July. It was in America. Mm-hmm. Well, July of 15. Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and I keep mine home from the trunk of my car. I do the shit for you. People say, you got the books, girl. I took books. I'm never without my books, you know, just in case I'm in my car. And so, yeah, that's how the books came about. And everyone's wondering if there's going to be a trilogy, if there's going to be a third one. And I don't know. She's a full-grown woman. So I said, I really asked my pastor to do some hearing lyrics over both of them. You really have to pay for the payment. Because she's a woman. And two other books that are completely not of any similarity to the two that I've written. So, I'm just going right in the road. I'm looking for time. The Bible's given the granite me being a cancer survivor 6 years. I am blessed and highly favored. Who I dread everywhere, and getting ready to take him on the Caribbean cruise. That's what he can. We probably lay out on the sombreros or whatever he calls it. But there, you are going to be fine.
What are you doing?
Well, one is about this girl who has this boyfriend through high school, well, it's a junior high, and up through graduation, and he, he's kind of misled in that man, in the book, and, but she's at one college, and she's at another, and he, he's been a little kind of careless. Good. Think it'll be, I think it's going to be pretty good because I don't want to give it up. But I think it's going to be, good, and it's going to be shocking from the start and the events that take place in it. It'll be a little shocking. Thriller. Right out of high school, which was in 1960, all I can remember standing outside under the sunshine and beautiful day, and some of the girls were just crying, and, oh, I'm going to miss you. Me and my girlfriends were saying, oh, that's crazy. we were headed to the big lights, bright city, you know. So yes, my aunt, my mother's sister, took my cousin and I, who graduated at the same time, she was in Virginia, to Chicago. I was in Logan one day, in Chicago the next, and having my high school diploma in hand, I went job hunting. Well, my first job was a speaker. I was a tour adjuster. I had a desk job, though. I'm, you know, pretty good. I stayed in Chicago for just for a couple of years. And one thing that came about with my singing, working at Speaker, I had become friends with some of the girls there. And there was one lady who was in her, I think she was in her early 40s. But the three or four of us being virtually teenagers, between 18 and 19 or so, she was sort of like our mother here. And so when we'd want to go out, she would chaperone us. And we were at this particular club. I can't think of the name of the club. I'm not sure whose club it was, but Red Fox was there. And it was the Red Fox Review, was the name of the show that was being presented. Anytime a song came on, it could be on boxes at that time, I was always singing. And so here we are, I'm singing along with, I'm trying to think of the song now, I'm trying to think of the song that I was singing along with. I was overheard. And being overheard, after that, Red Fox and one of his, I guess, assistants or whatever, came to my aunt's house to ask if I could travel with her. And my aunt was my guardian. Mm-hmm. And in that day, you don't do, you follow instructions, you follow all of them. I never had a desire to be a star or a singer. That was not in my, it just wasn't. I liked to sing, but I never wanted to be a star. And so they were talking about me, and I wasn't allowed to be in the room. I was in the kitchen, but I was listening. I was eavesdropping. And my aunt was very soft-spoken, real short, dumpy lady, beautiful, chronicled lady, hair over her shoulders. And she was to me, she says, well, if one of her brothers goes with her, I might consider it. But I cannot allow her to go with her by herself. So that was the end of that. But I never, ever, never, ever regretted it. Being from the coal field, dumb as dirt. I mean, you know, hillbilly, all of the, they even talked about my accent, and I didn't think I had one. But they thought it was the cutest thing, because I'd say up there and down yonder and over, you know, y'all over that slang. They say, well, I say up there, you going up there? Anyway, when I came back home, because when I left, I was in love. And so love brought me back. And I've been back ever since. And so married my teenage love. We've been together so long now. No, Lord have mercy. We've dating when I was about 14, 15. And I'm 73 now, so 4 years ago. And so I worked at FICO manufacturing for some years. I had my children in between and worked at the teacher's aid food school system. Got me a little college in at Southern. And could type like mad. Typing over 100 words, you know, in those old typewriters. So, had a typing experience when I went to Legend General as a nurse's aide and worked there and loved working as a nurse's aide. As a matter of fact, Billy, I forget Billy's last name is, but I saw him, he was coming in all night, and I was leaving out last night. And he's almost 90, and he's 80-something, and he saw me, calls me Corey. He said, there's my Corey. And he says, he's real tall. He said, I said, Billy, how you doing? He said, I'm getting old and ugly. I said, well, you just stay the way you are. But he is one of the patients that I remember as a nurse's aide that we stayed with all night because he was in a severe mining accident. And he was in the Ward B, which was in the old hospital. And we were afraid, as Mrs. Aide, we were afraid to leave him. We didn't think we'd see him in the next. He was missed. And we virtually worked with him around the clock. And he credits us with saving his life. But he was our baby. We took him at our wounds and the church. You know, and now, are you going to church today? You didn't have a choice. You know, it's like you were going to school in church, whether you wanted to or not. Those were two things you were going to do. Now, if you happen to be sick on Sunday morning and didn't get up for Sunday school in church, then there wasn't no need to get sick, getting well at 3 o'clock, thinking you were going to go to the movie. Mm-hmm. You were sick that morning, you just made your face it. Your environment doesn't have to determine how you come out, because you can always adjust your environment. it when he was doing his music and stuff, you know. So he called him over to the house and he brought his recorder over, and I said, I don't want to put these two on the CD.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the music to him.
Mm-hmm.
So while he was there, then I sang to him. So now I know those two are on the CD. And then I had Billy Dingus, that's a mighty piano player here in Logan. And I went to his house where he had a studio years ago. And he took the music to one of my sons. And that was about the only three that I actually had other than me recording on a cassette or something. But I have none out in the atmosphere. And every year I lie to the people that ain't getting it. And so didn't you have it? You have got recording. I'm like, I don't have one next year, I promise. And I lie every year. I've never done it yet. And Jenny Wilson, yes, and picking in the park. I'm blessed every year to be asked by her grandson to come and participate. I get the pleasure of doing it on Sunday, because I do all gospel. And it's a great honor. They allow me to pray over the food, and I'm like, all right, now, just let me preach a little bit. Yeah. But it's been an honor for some years past to be a part of Jenny's Picking in the Park. My husband, huh? That's usually around Labor Day, isn't it, honey? Usually around the Labor Day holiday. And they have an array of musicians that come in and fill the day with singing and a couple of days, I think it's Saturday and Sunday. But they still, I think they have it on Fridays all the time at the building that's called Picking in the Park. It used to be at the amphitheater. But it seemed like every year it was pouring. They had to stick it inside. And I get a joy out of it. My husband had gotten to the point now. He still plays, though. He don't think he can play. He still gets in that pair of piano. But his wind is short now, and he can't, his stamina to kind of fill in a concert or something like that. Now, he and Bob Moon, he's my brother from another mother. He and I, we three of them get together with some of the guys and reminisce, you know. He loves Motown, and I do too. And so the first 80th birthday, we go in a big party, and we just had a Motown time. Andrea Santos and I are going to practice, but we promised that we're going to sing at her church real soon. So we've got to get together. I've got to wait till the girl gets unbusy.
Right.
She's busy. So. You know what I've been thinking? And now, when I say me, I've even prayed about this because I don't want it to be like I'm trying to, when I say, back my bitch, man, I toot my own horn, back my bitch. I'm going to toot that horn, my bitch. That's just it. But my son and my son, like, too, he's just a sweetheart to me. But, you know, that we are just not doing anything with. And but I have been thinking for the last several weeks about doing a concert with a litany of my original.
Mm-hmm.
All of these are originals.
Mm-hmm.
And having a concert, I don't know how I would go about it, and it's not for anything but just for them to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's something I've been thinking about. That I do here is for can we do the Black History Month?
Okay.
But it usually ends up being Brandon February because the weather March. We did it in March this year because the weather was last year was the same thing. And then we had a college to attend. Was it Jesuit College in St. Louis, Missouri? She got me so
this has been a pleasure, and I appreciate you even convincing me.